I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. In this country, there are some great broadcasters, some very fine ones, but there isn't anyone at the moment who is as respected, beloved, and admired, not to mention critically lauded, than Gian Gomeshi. His CBC radio program Q is doing tremendously well in the ratings across the country. It's widely subscribed to online via the iTunes, YouTube, and so on. He's on the air in the United States, and there's a television version on the CBC. He's got the hip street cred that one gets from being a member of a band, Moxie Fruvis. In fact, he's still in the music business, managing lights. But add to his list of accomplishments, credits, and awards that of author. This fall, he published a remarkable memoir, 1982. I've been reading it, and I've found it profoundly moving. He's a pretty good writer. He's perceptive and honest in this book. I was born in 1982, so the year has some special meaning for me. For Mr. Gomeshi, it was formative in that he was a 14-year-old trying to fit in. His parents had come earlier from England by way of Iran, and the whole confluence of culture for Gian Gomeshi was sometimes too much to take. He wanted to be one with the cool kids, yet his skin color, music, and fashion taste all seemed confused and confusing to many. We'll talk a bit about the book now, which is published by Viking. Gian.ca is the website for more. Q is on weekdays at 10 a.m. on CBC Radio 1. I'm very pleased to welcome to the Plant Online program Gian Gomeshi. Mr. Gomeshi, good morning.
Hey, it's a great pleasure to be with you, and thank you for calling me a pretty good writer.
you're actually a fine writer. You're very good.
I don't know,
good.
It's fine. Yeah. Stick with your words. I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
Thank you for that introduction.
You're very welcome. How did this book come about? Did they come to you, or did you have the idea that you wanted to write about growing up?
I definitely had the idea that I wanted to write something. I'd been approached by various publishers because they knew that I write for the show. I write my opening essays. I'd written for the National Post for a couple of years, a column. I had written op-ed pieces in the past for different newspapers, and of course, I started by writing satire, political satire, with Moxie Fruvis before we were sort of a band, you know. But I was always approached with this sort of notion of doing something along the lines of a traditional memoir, and I really wasn't interested in that. I mean, this book, in some cases, by reviewers or those who interview me, has been called a life story or a memoir, and it's a bit misleading because it's not what you would traditionally call what they call, I've learned in the literary business, a womb to tomb memoir, which is I was born, and then here's a list of accomplishments, and then here's who I am, and that's just something that didn't excite me, and it didn't feel like the right time for me. I did, however, have the idea of doing some storytelling, and in fact, doing stories based on my own pathetic adventures, and so when I started writing that, and originally it was just going to be some stories, each story rooted from a song, a trigger being the song, and then some cultural observation related to it. But as soon as I started writing, within the first week of writing, I like very early on, I kind of realized that I wanted to focus on one period, and that's this year, 1982, and the idea of being this 14-year-old kid who really wants to be Bowie, to fit in, David Bowie, and this first-generation immigrant kid who thinks that, you know, this will be my way to not just being accepted and widely loved, but also winning the heart of the girl I was smitten with, the older woman, Wendy, who's 16, who I'm attracted to because she reminds me of Bowie.
Yeah. So was this a year, this period in your life, something that you'd thought about a lot since?
I thought about a couple of the stories. I mean, you know, that one of the pivotal sort of through lines of the book is this big concert that happens in the summer of 1982, and it's like it was called the Police Picnic, and the headliners were the Police, but there was all these alternative and new wave and punk bands on the bill, and it was kind of a precursor to Lollapalooza. So you think this big grandstand or stadium show, but more alternative, and I end up attending that, even though I'm younger than most of the people there, and having quite a profound experience in terms of a moment of moving and graduating into adulthood or into a more sophisticated teenage years and understanding myself, but also losing a very important item, which is kind of the equivalent of my security blanket, my Linus blanket, if you put it in Charlie Brown terms. And so I knew that story, which involves, you know, this incident that happens with someone, one that I wanted to tell, but no, I haven't sort of been walking around for 25 years going, I got to write about this year in 1982. You know, it just kind of came to me.
Because when people write memoirs, and I mean, I'm sure you know this, I mean, there's a reason why. Because they have to work something out or they have to deal with something that
right.
happened.
Right.
In your case, it doesn't seem like it was, right?
Well, here's what I'll say. Once I started writing it, then it became, I don't want to say an obsession, but it became certainly an imperative for it to come out. I was very much situated in my mind in that year and in that aesthetic. And in fact, because I had so much else going on in my life, I was taking these trips down to this little rock and roll hotel in L.A. where I'd write the book, and it was quite a trial doing all the things that I was doing. I was still doing Q and other stuff that I do, and my publisher at one point, this was probably in about November of 2011, said, you know, we need to make a call on this because we need to do advance media promotion and stuff. If you want, why don't we put the book out in September 2013? That'll give you an extra year to write it, and you know, you don't have to, like, sweat it. And I actually said no. I know it's going to be not easy for me, and I'm going to use every waking hour to do it, but this book has to come out of me now. So it did actually feel that way, strangely enough, that there was a story that had to come out. And you know, I like to think of it as a funny book. I wanted it to be quirky. I wanted it to be entertaining. I wanted people to laugh. But the subtext of the book is about being a first-generation immigrant, particularly of Iranian descent, and really struggling with some of the implications of that, especially in a time when there weren't a lot of other Iranians around, and there was a great deal of misunderstanding about being Middle Eastern, and that is a serious story that I think embedded in some of these entertaining tales I wanted to come out.
You mentioned that you had to go to L.A. to write this?
Yeah.
You couldn't write this, say, at home or in Toronto where you live?
No, I really couldn't. I really felt, you know, I by no means think of myself as a celebrity in Canada, but I do feel like I have a public profile. People tend to recognize me. People tend to talk to me, and I feel generally like I have to be on in Canada. If I go to the coffee shop or if I'm, you know, around, I just got to be kind of, I'm always aware of being a public person, whereas when I was in L.A., I was just kind of, nobody gave a shit about me, you know, so it's kind of like, it was easier. And also this particular place that I had chosen is a place where, that has a deep history from the 70s and 80s of rock stars hanging out there, so I felt like it had this kind of taste of what I wanted to do, and by going down there, I could shut off the tap on everything else I'm doing and kind of really just focus on writing.
Now, the immigrant experience is something that's in the book. You talk about the stuff that you dealt with, being first generation, the stuff that your parents dealt with. What did they think of the book, your mom and dad?
It's a really good question. I mean, the funny thing about my parents is they're the sweetest people in the world, and they're relatively private people. So it's been this great paradox that they've had this son who is as public as I am, and has sort of thrown the doors open on our family. But, and you know, so I mean, because of that, I think given their druthers, there would be no book if they had the choice. Actually, given their druthers, if it was their choice, there would be a book, and it would be called How I Became Successful in Medicine and Also Engineering by Jean Ganashi.
Yeah.
But having said that, I gave them a copy of the book. I warned them and sort of gave them a copy right after I had given one to the publisher, and said, you know, this is going to come out in a few months. Read it now. I know there's some stuff you're not going to like in here, because it's a pretty honest portrayal of them, and at times I do use them for humor. But at first, you know, I could tell it wasn't easy for them, but they've been really supportive, and I'm very grateful for how they've sort of accepted it. My mother's still worried about what some of the neighbors think and stuff, but overall, they seem, you know, they're proud that it's a big bestseller and all that shit.
Yeah, but Thornhill has changed, hasn't it, since?
Thornhill Toronto has changed profoundly. Yeah. I mean, especially the area of Thornhill that I was in, which, you know, see, when we came to Canada, I was this little kid in the 70s, and then first we moved to a place called Daw Mills, which is in the center of Toronto, and it, even in the 70s, when I was a little kid, it was very diverse. So I arrive here, and it's quite emancipating. My best friends immediately are Roy, this Pakistani kid, and David, this black kid, and Nina Chi, who's South Korean, who in grade 3 becomes my first girlfriend, and our entire relationship, you know, involves her trying to kiss me and me running away. Not that much has changed, really, these days. It's just sort of the reverse. Yeah. But then my family, you know, in this strike of, like, middle-class social mobility genius, my father, sort of Middle Eastern Jefferson style, it's like, moving on up, you know, like, yeah. my father's like, we are moving to Thornhill, it is big house, you know, and so we go to Thornhill, but the only problem with Thornhill at the time is that it's really homogenous and conservative and white, and which is all very lovely, but we became the only ethnic family on the street, and so that was an added layer of what most of us already go through in terms of being preteens, of trying to navigate our way through who we are and where our life is going, and so then there's this layer of me also being from this place, and then the Iranian Revolution happens, and not only am I from this other place, but this place that people consider evil, and they start calling me terrorist, and all of those layers added to it. Now, to get to your question, 30 years later, not only is Thornhill a really diverse place, but with great irony, a lot of the immigrants that are in Thornhill are Iranian immigrants right now, which is also fabulous, but it's sort of like, thanks, guys. Where were you 20 years ago? I could use some backup, you know?
Yeah. Oh, was there anyone that you wrote the book for? I'm thinking there must be someone who's reading this book or who should read this book who will benefit from the sense that it'll help them deal with the stuff that you dealt
right.
with. Maybe
right.
there's some Iranian kid who's 14 or any immigrant for that matter.
It's a really perceptive observation, maybe because you can relate to the immigrant experience, but I pretty much weekly, if not a few times a week, for years now, and particularly as Q has grown, I get notes from emails or tweets or Facebook messages or whatever from young, it's honestly not restricted to Iranians. It'll be from, you know, brown kids in general or immigrant kids who will write to me and kind of go, I don't know how to fit in, or I feel, or somebody said, call me this name, or is it okay that I want to be a musician rather than an engineer, or, you know, it's thank you for being, you know, an example of someone who, you know, can go into the media and all that. And it always surprises me because I always think of all of that as really antiquated. I think of that as the reality of when I was a kid and think, okay, well, we've progressed so much since then, but those divisions and those difficulties still exist. And you're right. I mean, part of the impetus for the book, and part of the impetus, quite frankly, for self-identifying as Iranian-Canadian or Persian-Canadian, I use them interchangeably, at all, is to kind of send the message to kids like that you do have an opportunity. I'm happy to provide an example, and to coin a very popular phrase of the last year or two, it does get better.
Yeah. What was it about David Bowie that that fascinated you and that still fascinates you today? I mean, it's not the kind of music that I listen to, but in reading this book, you really get the sense that it was an obsession for you. Was it?
Yeah, I think. Well, it was an obsession in as much as anyone has a favorite band or musical idol, and Bowie was mine. I think. And continues to be. I mean, I do think the guy's a genius. I do think he's one of the great pioneers of contemporary pop and rock music. You say it's not the kind of music you listen to, but I bet you if you told me your top favorite five artists, I could draw a line back to Bowie in terms of what they do musically, no matter almost what the genre is. I mean, unless you only listen to jazz or something or classical. I do think he's had that kind of supreme influence on contemporary music. But I think for me what it was is not unrelated to what we were talking about earlier in terms being an immigrant, because I think there's a lot of different ways that one can feel like an outsider, or feel like they don't fit in, or they can worry about that, or have anxiety about it, or feel it on the inside. And I think Bowie really represented the outsider, you know, for kids in, of my vintage, you know, long before Lady Gaga and her Little Monsters, who I think she quite commendably says, you know, it's okay to be unique, guys, you know, do this. Bowie, she got that from Bowie. Bowie was doing that, and songs from when I was a little kid that I came to 10 years after they'd been written, or 15 years after they'd been written, but a song like Changes, you know, Bowie, it's almost a love letter to anybody who's ever felt like an outsider, or who has alternative leanings, or who wonders about how to fit in. And I think in a latent way, that's what was going on with Bowie. I was kind of seeing him as an aspiration.
You've interviewed everyone. He hasn't done Q yet, is that correct?
No.
No. Will he ever do Q?
It's more up to him than me. He doesn't do interviews. He's had some health issues in recent years, and it's very, very difficult for anybody. He hasn't done any interviews. I would really love to. For a long time, I was kind of scared of interviewing Bowie, because I thought, he's my idol. What if it doesn't quite turn out how I want it to be, or for whatever reason, he's not as gracious or generous as everyone has always said he is, and all. I just was so worried about being disillusioned, but yeah. I'm way past that at this point. I would love to sit down with him, and I do think he's a genius. I do think it would be such an interesting conversation to have, but I don't know. I don't know when it's going to happen.
So you, in the book, you also deal with, you talk about the girl problem, so you bare your heart in the course of the book. What did you learn about yourself and your heart in terms of writing it, looking back, say?
It was a reminder that I was imperfect, that in terms of the way I dealt in interpersonal relations, it wasn't. Oftentimes, it's stories about me being pathetic and me pining after Wendy, who's this older, cool woman who doesn't always have the time for me and stuff. But and so that positions me as kind of a victim. But ultimately, stuff happens in the book where I'm not treating my interpersonal relationships with the most integrity I could either, and it was interesting revisiting that and taking responsibility and not whitewashing it in print. And I don't think you've gotten to the end of the book. In the final chapter, some stuff happens that will reveal what I'm talking about. But the other thing I learned, quite frankly, is how big a role. I sort of knew this in latent terms, but how big a role music played for me. Music governed everything to a certain extent in terms of focusing what I was into and what I believed and who I was attracted to, even, you know?
So if we told the 14-year-old Gian what would happen 30 years later, I guess he wouldn't have expected what's happened, right?
No, I don't think he would have. I think there's sort of a one thing that I would say, which is that I always did, even if I felt like an outsider on the inside, I wasn't unknown or unpopular in the sense that I generally did feel like I've always had a sense that I might end up being a public person. I don't know. I didn't know what that would mean. And it could mean something very different from what I'm doing now. I think I'd be really surprised, though, to be doing what I'm doing, because I didn't really think this avenue was open to me. I thought when I remember distinctly at 12 years old thinking I'd love to go into the media, and thinking that's just not going to happen. I'm too weird. I've got, you know, a weird name and brownish olivey skin, and I come from this strange place, and I'm just never gonna. I might as well give up the thought of that. And so, and that's very real. I don't say that to be sort of melodramatic. It's actually true that I just did not think that was a possibility for me. And so to have made that a possibility is pretty rewarding. And I think the 14-year-old me would think that was cool.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah. As someone who promotes books on his show, and now having written your own, has that changed you as a broadcaster, say? I mean, are you more sympathetic to the authors that come on Q?
I think maybe, for sure. I've got an empathy around the process and writing of the whole book and dealing with publishers and stuff that gives me a window into it all that will help me when I'm interviewing authors or in that milieu. I think that one of the things I have learned, though, is I've done an extensive tour and been interviewed a lot. So being back to being the interviewee, as I was for many years as a musician, has been really instructive. It has crystallized and consolidated my ideas around what I think are good interviews and what aren't. And it has surprised me, to sound somewhat pompous about it, how many interviewers aren't prepared or don't prosecute good interviews, and how there are some who are great, and it's been really gratifying when that's happened. But that's been really interesting and instructive for me, and I've tried not to be doing interviews and at the same time judging the interviewer as they do them, but there's been a few where I've just kind of gone, wow, you'd be so much better at this if you did this, or if you were more researched, or, if you'd taken the time to think about this before we got together. So,
I guess I should have finished the book, right?
No, I think this has been a really, I always finish the book, but I also think you're clearly, you've clearly thought about it. You sat inside it and come up with a really interesting arc of questions, and you're reacting to the things I'm saying. It doesn't sound like you're just thinking about what the next question is, which is one of the peeves I have sometimes. So, no, I'm quite enjoying this, or I have enjoyed it.
Yeah, now, reading about you, listening to the show, reading this book, and so on, I mean, professionally and personally, it seems like it's a good time for you. I mean, is it?
Sounds like one of the questions you stole from me. I asked that question towards the end of the interview. That's usually a Gian question. You don't listen to my show by chance, do you?
It's from time to time, I do. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's been a really, it's been a pretty powerful year. Yeah. It's been a lot of big developments and things that I've been really proud of, and the book certainly being a big part of that, and the growth of Q in America, and continuing to build the show and do what I think is really quality work with that, and growing as a person. I would say, in that sense, professionally, it's been a really good time, yeah. It's been a good year.
Your day is quite busy, from what I've read of you. How do you relax? Do you find time? Do you have the time to relax?
No.
No.
I don't really relax, and that's an issue. I'm trying to work on that.
Yeah.
I have a very intense schedule, for sure. I work 7 days a week, and I don't take a lot of time, downtime. And that is an issue because I'm going to burn out.
Yeah. Will you?
But it's better to burn out than to fade away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. will you write about yourself again? Say.
Yeah. Yeah. I. It can be a chore when I'm in the actual process, but I've it's been invigorating writing a book, and I'm so brimming with ideas. You'd think for a guy who friggin' does a show every day and does an opening essay and all that, I'd be tapped out of stuff. But there's so much I want to do. It's just picking the next thing, and it won't be for a little while because I really need to not have every moment filled for now. So I'll take a few months. I'd like to write another book for sure.
this has been such a pleasure for me because I'm a fan to talk to you today and to read this book because it's a very fine achievement. Congratulations on it.
Thanks, my friend. It's been really fun for me, even though you stole all your questions from me. I still think, I mean, that's what made it enjoyable, quite frankly. It was like speaking to myself. No, I it was great. Thanks a lot. It's been rewarding, and this is this is the last interview I'm doing in 2012, and I'm glad it's been such a thoughtful one. Thank you for this.
Q is on weekdays at 10 a.m., cbc.ca/qgeon.ca is the website for more. The book is called 1982. It's published by Viking. Gian Gomeshi joined me on the line from Toronto in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.